Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice. Norman San is our guest this week, and if you haven't checked him out on TikTok yet, you're missing out on relatable verses with wordplay that often taps into nostalgia from our own childhoods. That being said, it's no surprise that Norman chose Ahmad's 1994 single Back in the Day to discuss this week. Should we all be diving deeper into Ahmad's catalog, or should we just leave him back in the day? Lace up your British Knights and grab a Tootsie Pop, because we're about to find out. All the way live, I think I was about 10. One of those happy little niggas singing the blues that be always trying to bag with the shag and karate shoes.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed. And you can live off royalties forever.
And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder or is it one hit?
Norman, welcome to the show. We have a fun one today. We are talking about Ahmad Back in the Day. My first question was, were you a fan of this song back in the day?
I forgot what year this came out, but I know it was the 90s. I don't know if I was alive yet, but I just remember it playing a lot.
94.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't old enough to even understand anything at that time, but I know for sure. Growing up, the song was still in rotation everywhere.
I thought that this was when I downloaded this song online. Yeah. When I downloaded it, it was listed as a Far Side song, and I can 100% understand why it would be mislabeled as that, though, because like he kind of sounds like Booty Brown's rapping style a little bit, and it's 1000% like if you put this on immediately after Passing Me By, I'd be like, yep, these are in the same ballpark. This could be the same artist.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, though, why they would mislabel it.
I've been listening to this album all day, and I'm kind of a little bit curious as to why this guy was a one-hit wonder. And the one thing I will say about it's very 90s,
yeah,
in that, yes, the beats are very 90s. It's very uplifting, maybe a little repetitive on some of the stuff, but the guy has a cool voice. He has a good flow. I think I kind of don't understand why this was his only hit.
Well,
I think part of it was that he didn't put out another album for 16 years.
Yeah, I think it was Giant. So like, I feel bad because he was at a time where like music was kind of like controlled by certain people. I mean, there's a great story. Everybody probably knows about like Vanilla Ice and like Suge Knight, you know, like that's kind of how the music was ran in like the 90s, right? Where people could give over like rights to songs just by you dangling someone out of a a window on a roof by their legs. Right. So like most of the time these like one-off record companies didn't go major, and they just signed a deal with a major. They were like subsidiaries, and they would go under. And when they go under, all of the artists could no longer release music anymore. So that's right. What happened to this guy, probably.
I'll throw another theory out there, though. Like, he feels like the tail end of the alternative mindful hip hop, because we're talking 1994, like Ready to Die by Biggie's about to drop. Like, Tupac's about to explode even bigger than he's ever been with like California Love. And like I think that he came out just as the gangster rap thing was about to explode. And I love this song, but I love this song because it reminds me of all of the artists that gangster rap took off the map, like A Tribe Called Quest.
Yeah, De La Soul. Yeah. Like, yeah, you're right. I mean, he was from South Central, though. So he was a hood guy, too. Like, yeah. Fair. I mean, even though he did go to, I want to say this guy was on the creative side, because I've heard some of, I think he has like the Fourth Avenue Jones, like band.
Yes, he's part of Fourth Avenue Jones.
And I think they're like alternative a little bit.
They're alternative. They're also, I think they might be a Christian group.
That's
which kind of.
That's dove. I didn't know that.
Because they won a Dove Award.
What?
And they put out their last record on Goatee Records, which is from the dude from DC Talk. And they recorded a cover of Jesus Freak.
What?
For a DC Talk cover album.
Get out of here. That's crazy. That blew my mind. What?
He just took a real weird turn in like 2000 when he formed Fourth Avenue Jones.
He just reformed himself. That's crazy. You taught me something. That's crazy. The funny thing, though, is like I didn't grow up really listening to rap. You know, my brothers did. And I just remember hearing real music. I'm not that hip hop isn't real music, but like I just remember like hearing like instruments and stuff, right? Like I remember growing up and just hearing somebody play like an actual piece. And break it down. Like, okay, this is what we're playing. We're gonna be in like F sharp minor, and we're gonna go here, da da da. And I remember, you know, being in choir. Like the reason I'm bringing this up is because of church, and being like at church, and that going down at church. Some of the guys at church kind of went off on a, tangent, and then they started playing Love TKO. And I remember being like, oh, that's the back in the days when I was just a little nigga rap. And then they were like, no, this is not that. This is Love TKO, my titty. And I'm like, wait, what's Love TKO? And they were like, oh, you got it, da da da. And then I remember asking my stepdad about all these old school songs. So, yeah, man, the history with the back in the day song and like my, you know, introduction to like a lot of the classic, you know, classics was just, it's crazy how it all just like came together. But
and then this song's more classic than I think I actually realized, because I always knew and liked it. But when I did the research and saw that, like, who was it? Mariah Carey, mm-hmm. Travis McCoy, mm-hmm. and J. Cole have all like done their own interpretation of this song, like in their career. I was like, that's insane. That song has had that staying power.
Yeah. Hey, I didn't know the Teddy Pendergrass song. I was very surprised that I didn't know that song, considering I think it's one of his biggest songs. I don't know why. How did I miss this song? But just like you were saying, I knew this song.
Yeah.
I knew the Ahmad song.
Yeah, I did.
And so I don't know. Maybe it was just the time or something. Or maybe the Teddy Pendergrass song doesn't get played on the,
His catalog, though. I mean, Teddy Pendergrass is crazy. So it's like, you could think about Close the Door before you think about Love TKO. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, I didn't know it. Which, now I got to go back. That's the next thing I got to listen to all day long is catch up on my Teddy Pendergrass, because I love the sample.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing, the music alone. And that's even when I was listening to the whole album. There's so many good beats. I think we got spoiled in recent years by, you know, listen to the new Kendrick Lamar or something. And it's just, you know, it's crazy where hip hop has gone and the exciting dynamics of an album. Now we're back in the 90s. It was kind of, you had the beat. It's kind of the same beat through the whole thing. You didn't have this journey you went on for the most part when it came to hip hop. So I think that maybe my attention span is a little bit lower. I think I need like the craziness.
Yeah. A lot of that 90s stuff, even early 2000s was, just, you know, hip hop is coming off of the disco, like the disco vibe when it starts, where it's just like, you know, you got the, you know, 10 maybe 15 seconds of a break.
Right.
And you just go and you just rap on top of the break beat. And hip hop was like that for a very long time, like late 70s, early 80s, late 80s, even early 90s. You just got the, and that, even this song, right? It's just the TKO intro. Right. And it just loops, right? It's just like nothing else. Like, that's it. And like, so I think, you know, now in today's world, you know, you get all of these artists who are just like in tune with very, very complex music theory ideas. Like, I mean, it's just crazy. I mean, so you see a lot of the influence from these guys talking about what's going on. But then you, like you mentioned, like today, you know, to digest something, is like, you won't even know who's sampling what in today's world. Like, you're talking about Kendrick. Like, you could go to his album and be like, what? I didn't even hear that sample. Like, he used the Powerpuff Girls.
It's like crazy. It's insane.
I didn't even hear that.
How many different songs, you know, will all be within one song, but not this. This is one Teddy Pendergrass sample.
One loop.
That's like, I mean, that's why people constantly refer to like Paul's Boutique as like the most important hip hop album of all time. Because
who says that? Nobody's saying that.
I think Source Magazine named it the number one most important raps because that album, over 14 tracks, they sample 76 different artists and songs. Like, they were doing what Girl Talk decided to do like 20 years later, because it was the Dust Brothers in the production booth just being like, all right, we're gonna use this drum loop from this disco track to lead us into sampling. There's a point in that album where they layer the opening of Jaws over top of the shower scene from Psycho. So it's like the bass of the dump 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 with the reek 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 from Psycho playing over top of it, just to create like a really intense moment in the middle of a song before it goes right into like a backbeat into like them sharing verses on the sentence.
Rick Rubin was just, and that's why he gets the respect he does in hip hop, because, you know, and it's funny, like a lot of kids today, I mean, even kids my age, like, talk about Rick Rubin, bro, like, they're gonna be like, who? And it's like, wait, you do hip hop, you don't know who Rick Rubin is? Like, what? So, I mean, Def Jam has always kind of, they kind of pushed, like, they were pressing the boundaries, man. Like, even with the Walk This Way and the Run DMC thing and.
Yeah. What year was Paul's Boutique?
Okay, 89, right?
89.
Okay. All right. So, you know, think about how fast hip hop evolved, though. If you think about it, like, okay, when is Rapper's Delight come out? So, you know, not that was necessarily the first.
I want to say it's, but it's
that was one of the first ones, right? That was one of the first like disco songs that was looped.
Right. And
Good Times just over and over for 15 minutes.
But just even from that, say late 70s, I don't know exact year, but you know, people were sampling that. People were sampling those drum breaks from James Brown.
That was
a popular thing to rap on.
I hate to admit this, but I was in a session once and I had a buddy who had a lot of those like breaks from some of the like the old like tapes, and I was like, bro, I hope this dude goes to the restroom so I can just like steal all these breaks off his drum.
I guess James Brown was famous for leaving those drum breaks.
So
you had all the disco records that everyone was smashing and destroying because disco was dead, and then rappers were taking those like, hey, you're not going to use those, so we're going to rap over those.
You're not going to use these records with some of the you're not going to use these records with some of the most musically talented performers of all time.
Oh my gosh.
We'll take it.
Yeah, right. That's exactly what happened. And then I guess my main point here is, Matt, I didn't mean to make fun of you about the Paul's Boutique thing. Don't think of it that way necessarily. But how fast? Now picture, let's say, just for argument's sake, 1977 or something is like when rap starts to, I don't know, become a little bit mainstream, Sugar Hill Gang. I don't know who else at that time, but and maybe a few years later, Run DMC. So even that, say it was 1977, this song we're talking about today, Ahmad, is 1994. That is only 17 years. That is the equivalent of right now going back to 2005. It doesn't seem like that long ago for it to progress that far.
To where it's at.
You know, and
that's
only
crazy.
A few years later. Yeah,
that's crazy to think about.
A few years later, you have a song like California Love or something, which I think is just this giant production of a song. Yeah. And so it really feels like it went from zero to 100, right?
Yeah, technology probably moved that forward, because I even think about how, like, my first introduction to music, you know, how I was making songs on a karaoke machine. I'd have like my brother's CD of an instrumental cut that I don't know if you guys remember, but they used to cut the singles on an actual CD where it'd be like the single, the clean version, the explicit version, and the instrumental.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And I had like, plenty of those.
Yeah. So like I used to just take those from my brother, right? I'm like, he's gone. He's not using these. And I just would put it in the karaoke machine. Then I had a blank cassette tape because the karaoke machine had the little small, you know, 4-inch TV. It had a CD player on top. It had a microphone, and it had two cassette tapes at the bottom.
That's all you need.
Dude, I would just like hit record. I'd hit play on the CD player, and that instrumental would go, and I'd be on that, and I'd be at school with an actual cassette tape. People would be looking at me crazy. I'm like, bro, you got to listen to what I did on this cassette tape.
That's amazing, man. That's the equivalent of like when, you know, first starting bands and we didn't have a way to record and we would take a boom box or whatever and hit record, and that was our tape. And we were just, how exciting is it to have, it doesn't matter how bad the quality is, how exciting is it to have a recording of yourself for the first time, to be able to listen back to it. That was the best feeling. So it sounds like you had that technology you had there with that karaoke machine was even a little further ahead than what I had when I first recorded. Yeah. You know?
I was saying, I got three different thoughts in my head right now. First of all, Norman just literally told us the origin story of his entire TikTok presence, which is taking the instrumentals and rapping over top of it.
I didn't even think about that, man. That's crazy. Now we got some, bro, we got some Norman saying lore. That's crazy.
Yeah. Hey, Norman, I got to tell you something real quick about you. So Matt told me that he booked you for the show, and he said, well, you got to check out his TikToks and stuff. And then when I went and checked out, I went, I already know who Norman is. You came up on my TikTok, like, just as I'm scrolling through, you know?
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah.
Several times you have. I mean, that's crazy. The ramen.
Oh, yeah.
That came up just in my, whatever you call it, FYP.
Yeah, FYP. Yeah, your For You page,
Yep, you're in my FYP already, man. But, so that's how far your reach has gone. Matt booked you. And
that's
then,
dope.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That is crazy. That's so tight. So tight.
Number two, you talking about like creating those beats, have either of you seen was it Beats, Rhymes, and Life, the documentary about Tribe Called Quest?
I haven't.
They talk about how Q-Tip didn't know how to make samples or beats, so he would literally put a blank cassette tape into his boombox and just play the 10-second part that he wanted to sample over and over and over again, and he would have to record it in 10-second increments
create
that like a 10-minute beat for him to rap over top of later, which like just fucking love the drive of that. And
that's
then
crazy.
Finally, talking about Chris putting the music on the boombox, obviously you and I have talked about Daniel Johnston, where that dude wouldn't even make copies of his cassettes. He would just perform the album in its entirety over and over and over again for every homemade cassette that he would sell.
That's tight.
Think about how much someone like Q-Tip had to appreciate when the technology came along.
Yeah.
You know, all of us who are spoiled and had the technology for a long time, if you were doing that and then you got to gradually see the technology come along, man, he had
You'd be surprised, though. Like, I started off my career as an audio engineer, you'd be surprised how many of those guys are so stuck in their ways, though.
I've worked
at studios where it's like they will need to run everything tape. They'll have to do everything analog. They have to bring out the MPC and they have to run it through everything. They have to dub over drums and they have to. I'm like, bro, you know you can
cut
just freeze
tape?
This. I'm like, you know you can freeze this, right? You could just, we could do this digital. No, it don't feel the same, bro. It don't feel the same. I'm like, all right, man. I'm just an engineer, so whatever. Let's go for it.
Imagine cutting tape? I hear these stories about like cutting tape, and I'm like.
No, it's ridiculous. No, that's the worst. Washing pots from, you know, the SSL.
Yeah.
I mean, the dirty work that you do that I'm like, bro, just get a computer.
But you know what? The flip side of that is I feel like if you start in those trenches, when it does go digital, like, I think that one of the only reasons why with video editing, I've been able to constantly go like 10 years not doing any video editing, and then it's like jumping back on a bike, is because for the first 5 years that I did any video work, it was two VCRs hooked up to each other. And that was the way I had to edit. So then when you get to like, oh, you can just like digitally click, like just cut exactly where you want the cut instead of like having to hope that you've timed this perfectly. Like,
man,
it made me so much better at editing quickly. And I can do like, give me an hour project and I can do the full video edit in under 3 hours, because I spent 10 hours of my life as a kid trying to do the same thing.
That's crazy.
On like, and the hardest way.
Isn't it ironic how like, it's just like, tying that back into like his song, like, just the lyrics, right? About everything he did when he was young. That's why I love that track, because it makes me think about stuff in that way. Like the
Which we have to acknowledge, all this stuff that he did when he was young. He was 17 when he wrote this song. Yeah. He was a senior in high school when
he
got
barely
his
lived life.
He was,
he's still living. He's literally still living this stuff.
Bro. But that's, you know what's funny? So I have family from California, and it's just something about like West Coast and East Coast, people from the East Coast. They grow up so fast. In the South, it's so weird, because in the South, you're basically a child until like you just milk it. Like everybody in the South just milks it. Like we stay at home forever. We don't move out. Like we're just like, our moms are sweet, Southern hospitality, all that, bro. Like on the East and the West, bro, like I've heard some horror stories. Like I have friends in middle school who's like, yep, my mom making me get a job. I'm like, whoa, like, what you mean a job, bro? You mean cleaning your room? And it's getting rough out here in these streets. I'm just like.
Which also, because he was a teenager in 2013, Complex Magazine named this song one of the 19 best songs by teenage rappers over the last 19 years. Hey. And a couple noteworthy songs that were also on that list was The Block Is Hot by Lil Wayne,
man.
Lil Mama's Lip Gloss,
man.
Mac Miller's Donald Trump, and something that we've talked about previously on this show, Jaquan's Tipsy, all made Complex's list.
I love Jaquan Tipsy.
Yeah, that's the one. Hey, that guy's career is unfortunate too, man.
We did a deep dive on Jaquan.
Yeah, man. But I feel like you guys are right though. Like I feel like if Ahmad would have put out more songs, it'd have been a no-brainer.
Yeah. You know, first of all, touching on. Yeah, he has this great sample, and then he's touching on nostalgia, and people are going to eat that up every time. I wanted to talk to you guys about, when you look at the verses of this song, was there anything that he's rapping about in this song that you did or that you can relate to?
Hide and go get it.
What is the – okay, what's
so, okay, let me explain this to you. So okay. In the hood, right? So like this is funny. So when you grow up in the hood, right, there are just regular games that just are regular games, like hide and seek, right?
Sure.
You know, ding dong ditch or whatever you call
definitely
it.
Definitely right? Did that.
But there are remixes. There are hood remixes to everything, right? Just like there are hood remixes to food. There's like a hood remix to a song, right? There's always like a hood remix to like 1,000 Miles, or like, you know, there's always something in a hood remix, right? So like, bro, there's a hood remix to hide and go seek. And it's instead of like, you know, counting and then going to find each other and being like, hi, I got you. It's like the dudes would count, the girls would go hide, and whatever dude finds the girl, you can do whatever. It's kind of,
whoa.
Yeah. No, it's kind of bad. Yeah. It was, but I mean, in my hood, it was more so like just kissing, like, you know, just kiss the girl. Right. And we would use that to kiss like the most popular girls if you were like a nerd like me.
Yeah. It's like a version of spin the bottle.
Exactly.
It's more athletic. Athletic spin the bottle.
but man, the girls, they were good at hiding though. Like, we barely won that game. But yeah, that's hide and go get it in the bungalows.
Yeah, the only one that I kind of can connect to. I mean, I think I did Ding Dong Ditch once and my anxiety just couldn't take it. So I was done after that. But there's the one line, and I actually love the rhyme scheme of this part too, but he says, saying, yo mama's black, his mama this, his mama that, then you get mad, want to scrap, and stay mad about 10 minutes, then it's back on the bikes.
Yeah.
And I definitely relate to the like, those 10-minute hate your friends moments, yeah. and then like immediately you're just like, all right, let's go swimming. Yeah, like, you just like move on with like.
That's every like, yeah, man. That's yeah. That, you're right though. That rhyme scheme was crazy. He's using that scat flow. That da na 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 da da in it da ba ba da ma. Yeah, it's yeah that dude. That,
and it underrated. Bounces back to Hood Rat yeah. like five verses early. Dude, the fact that a 17-year-old actually crafted what I think has a really kind of complex rap scheme is really cool.
Yeah,
it's really good. I mean, some of the references to gazelles, obviously, those were like the low-top Adidases. I think I had a pair of gazelles that he references. But then he talks about sporting BKs. Do you guys know what BKs are?
No, man.
No.
British
Knights. I thought it was
British
Knights.
British Knights. British Knights.
British Knights, which were...
yeah, British Knights.
Usually... those shoes, like yeah. high top, and they were usually all white shoes.
Yes,
and,
yes. I, okay. And, British
yeah,
Knights,
there was
yeah.
like, when I was, you know, it seems like maybe he's about 6 or 7 years older than me based on the lyrics of this song, but British, there was the popular shoe brands, it was Nike, Reebok. British Knights were one of them yeah. for a while.
Yeah, British Knights.
And then I don't know whatever happened to British Knights, but that's BK's.
The only reason I know about British Knights after you said British Knights is because of Martin.
Oh, did he wear them?
Bro, Martin had the most ridiculous shoe collection in the world. Like, a lot of people don't remember that element of that show. Like, his shoe collection was ridiculous. You can even probably, like, look it up now since Google.
I'm sure there's, like, a tribute
yeah. oh my
YouTube
gosh.
Channel to his shoes
and
at
I,
this point.
And I found out about it because I used to follow this channel called Preachers and Sneakers where they, like, these shoe heads, they, like, look at different pastors who, like, have, like, $1,000 shoes.
Yeah.
like, so like, but those guys are like shoe heads too. And like, I found a channel through their channel that like highlights other, you know, like crazy shoe collectors. And I was just like, whoa, I didn't even realize like when I used to watch Martin, he was always like rocking those. And I remember hearing about that growing up, like my brothers would be like, yeah.
I think shoe collecting so. Is actually cool. If I had money to spend on something and collect and keep them awesome, like I do think that like it's really cool. Like I really like Nike Air Maxes is like the only shoes I wear, and if I had more money I'd be on that Nike app buying buying yeah. them all the time. And you know, I'm sure you could make money on them if you
I'm sure an original pair of those British Knights are probably so much money.
Yeah, I bet.
Like a vintage 1980, yeah, like this 1980 shoe, the one that was the white and the green, that this actually looks like the one Martin had on in this one episode. It's like it's $600, bro.
Damn.
Ever wonder what a punch from Elton John feels like?
Or how you cope with having turned down the chance to be in Nirvana?
Or what signal Keith Richards gives when he wants you to get the hell out of his hotel room?
Fans of Too Much Effing Perspective don't have to wonder, because they've heard these exact stories and a jillion others on our podcast. I'm Alex Hoffman, former tour manager for Radiohead.
And I'm musician and comedy writer Alan Keller. On the TMEP show, we get guests like Nancy Wilson from Heart, Jeremiah Freites from The Lumineers, and Modern Family's Julie Bowen to tell us things they may have only shared with their therapist, clergy, or a TMZ stringer.
So join us on Too Much Effing Perspective. That's EFFING Perspective, the only podcast you crank up to 11.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
Find Yourself, the new single from Punchline, is out now.
I'll lead or I'll follow. I just want to get there. If anyone knows better, then please show us out of here. I'm not saying I know, but I see the next step. If that's all we can get, then it's better than zip. This is not junk, man, this is a fight. Trying to find yourself in the right place, the right time.
Listen to Punchlines Find Yourself on Apple Music, Spotify, and everywhere you stream music.
Hi, listeners. I'm Carolina.
And I'm Tessa. And together we are Femme Regard Podcast.
Femme.
We are a show dedicated to educating and entertaining underdeveloped filmmakers and film enthusiasts alike.
We love sharing our experiences as filmmakers, what we've learned and what we've gone through.
And we love bringing on professional industry guests.
We want our listeners to learn from the best and get an honest account of the biz.
So come join the Femme Fam and give us a listen every Friday.
Streaming on all the major podcast platforms, including YouTube and our website, femregard.com. And of course, the Geekscape Network.
You know, they also talk about, well, I don't remember what the Nike Cortez were. He talks about that in the second verse.
Yeah,
he talks about Pumas, of course. Yeah, K-Swiss.
K-Swiss, oh my gosh.
Yeah, those were also like, they almost look like Adidas.
Yeah, the Cortez shoes, that's the one that Forrest Gump wore when he was running around.
Oh, nice.
That's the Cortez.
I want those.
That's what makes that. Yeah, that I know that. I love Forrest Gump. That's one of, yeah.
Dude, I love don't get Forrest me started. Gump.
So the Cortez is what he wore when he ran America in a Nike Cortez.
Oh, sick. And he in the second verse, he name dropped J.J. Fad.
Who, oh, wow.
We could probably easily do a One Hit Thunder about JJ Fad. There's a line in this song where when I look at the lyrics written out, I'm like, okay. But the way he raps it in the song, he says it, he's saying about girls, and he said, eating pickles with Tootsie Pops. And I'm like, oh. But there's actually a comma, and eating pickles with Tootsie. So I think there's a separation, like, They ate pickles and then later ate Tootsie Pops, because the way it is in the song, I'm like, at the same time? It's not.
You'd be surprised, bro. I have a song where I'm like, people always give me crap about it. I'm like, ramen noodles and chocolate milk. And like, whoa. a lot of people always like, they make fun of me for that. I had a song like talking about like growing up. And the opening line was just like, ramen noodles and chocolate milk. Letting the time fly watching Dr. Phil. And people were like, ramen noodles and chocolate milk, bro. That sounds gross. Like, what are you doing?
I mean, as long as you're not dumping the chocolate milk into the ramen noodles.
Nah, bro. It was like a tall glass of cold, ice cold chocolate milk with some chicken picante spicy ramen noodles. And everybody would freak out when they would see it. They'd be like, bro, your stomach is going to hurt. And I'm like, no, this is the best combo in the world.
Wow. Okay. Maybe it's something like dipping your fries in your Frosty or something, that where it doesn't sound good, but then you do it and you're like, oh, that's all right.
The one thing I forgot though, like that, the line though, looked up to my bigger bro, asked if he can kick it. So when he went out with groupies, I can go tagging along. Man, yeah, that line, man, it just, because my brothers are both, they're like in their 40s. So like they were way older than me when I was young, and I just remember being like, dang, I wish I could hang out with them. Like, cause they were just, I'm like, they were just so cool, bro. Like being, you know, graduating high school when I was just like learning how to play the video game, and they're always going out and doing stuff, and being like, you know, 6 years old, you know, my middle brother's going to like prom and stuff. And I'm just like, I'm like, dang.
Some role models.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, I was the only child. I didn't get to experience that kind of shit. That's
good. Yeah. And I was the oldest. So they were all just disappointed by my example. I was the studious good kid. So the only references they got were teachers that had me previously being like, well, your brother would have never done
this. Oh, wow.
I know. So my siblings all went through a period where they just hated me.
Dang. Yeah, the bar was pretty low for me, so I mean that was a great thing, bro. Like that, I love both of my brothers, but the bar was so low. It was just like, I'm like, yo, if I could just if I can just graduate, I'm good. Like,
yeah, I was the only person in my family tree until maybe 3 years ago that graduated from college.
Yeah, exactly.
Out of like the entire, I was like, all right. Like you said, I set a high bar for everybody else. It was great.
You're mad at you.
Oh, yeah.
I could do no wrong after that.
Well, as far as Ahmad, so this song went to number 25 on the Billboard 100. So it wasn't exactly a smash hit either. It's kind of top 40. I'd love to have a top 40 song. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But 25, it wasn't like it was, you know, song of the summer or something. Matt, did you look up what else was in the charts at that time?
So I could not for the life of me figure out when this was on the charts in 1994, and I wasn't going to go week by week throughout the Billboard history for it. But what I can tell you is that the two biggest songs of 1994 were Ace of Base, The Sign, and Boys to Men, I'll Make Love to You. And that the best-selling record of that year was TLC's Crazy Sexy Cool.
All right.
So it was there was a lot of steep competition. So I think even getting to 26 as a 17-year-old rapper
crazy.
Is pretty impressive.
I mean, yeah, he was charting in UK too. So like, world hit. I mean, it was probably definitely like I don't know what it was like to grow up in South Central, but if you know anybody from South Central and you talk about the song, they have a fit if they were alive during this time. Like this was like the anthem for like people in South Central around that time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that so many people could, relate to it. I mean, it seems like everything, every verse is so specific.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, down to the shoe brands, down to the games, down to Shout Not JJ Fad. It seems.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's just like specific. You guys probably have that in your city too. Like I know in Houston. We have like a hometown hero. Like, I mean, there's like the Zero song that everybody in Houston knows, but nobody outside of Houston knows. But like, if you go anywhere in Houston, you can start off the line and then it, everybody can finish the entire song. It is
what song is it?
It's called Mo City Don by Zero. And the first lines are like slow, loud, and banging all in my trunk. And if you say that to anybody from Houston, and they're gonna be like, "Trump full of fuck, I ain't never been a punk." They'll finish the whole song. It's so crazy. But you go anywhere else and you see, and you go slow, loud, and bang, and all in my trunk, they'll look at you crazy. They'll be like, I'm sorry. Yeah. It does not.
I mean,
when I first got into rap, like behind my mom's back, I was like looking at some like underground battles from like just like these Philly, like they just look like scenes from Fight Club. They were just like in this like just like real grimy looking spot or they're outside and it'd just be battling each other. And I'd just be like, bro, these Philly guys are just crazy.
In Pittsburgh, we got black and yellow. That's our equivalent is, you know.
Oh my gosh. Y'all were so happy about that. You guys were so happy the whole world heard it. We were like, yes, we hear you, Wiz Khalifa.
we got Wiz and Mac, man. You know,
Mac Miller and Wiz Khalifa is like, but it took over the world though, man.
Yeah, and here's the thing, man. In Pittsburgh, it's a rough music town because it's like a lot of like bar rock bands, like we're like butt rock and
like cover bands.
and you know, we had for the most part, it's like, yeah, we had some punk rock bands and stuff come out of Pittsburgh, but we also on a grand scale, like all we had was Rusted Root. Send Me On My Way. He was like one big band from Pittsburgh. So when Wiz and Mac hit, at least it was like, okay, that's pretty cool, you know? And and then Black and Yellow, still to this day, if you go to a Steelers game or something, you know you're going to hear Black and Yellow at some point or another.
You know what it is. I don't know if you guys remember, like, I think it was like the Roaring Twenties or whatever. Like when that whole thing was like the Nick Carraway type vibes. What is it called? The Great Gatsby.
Great Gatsby, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all remember, but like a lot of great music and a lot of great, like, because I'm a big music theory guy too. A lot of those pioneers came from Pittsburgh. So like in the 1910, 1920, there's like a lot of I want to say this guy's name is like Ray Brown. You got Art Blackie. You got Roy Eldridge. I want to say George Benson. You have all of these great musicians who pioneered stuff. Billy. What's that guy's name? Eckstein, Billy, I want to say, bro. But yeah, it's a lot of pioneers from Pittsburgh. So, I mean, there's history, even though it didn't, you know,
It's a very historic place. I mean, this was, I mean, Pittsburgh's still, like, you know, to a certain extent, a major city. But I mean, when you look at the history of Pittsburgh, this was like a hub of so many things, you know, and so that's why, you know,
it's in
a lot of culture here.
It's in the heartbeat, though. It's in the heartbeat of the city. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of what it is. It's same thing with, you know, it's the same thing I feel like with Philly. Like, the Philly scene is like, the heartbeat of it is just like battle rap, like bar heavy rappers who can just blow your mind. Like, and then I feel like Cali is just like this laid back, you know, it's just like, even with Amaya, like him just like the way he approached that song, bro. Golly.
To be this age and sound this good and already have developed your
own sound.
Your whole sound, your voice, man. Hey, you know,
so jealous.
You know as well as anyone, man, that like, not only being the technical aspects of rapping, and but also having a personality to your voice, because you don't want to sound like everybody else.
Exactly.
So many of the huge artists, you could hear one word from them, you know who they are right off the top. You know, I mean, Snoop Dogg, Dre, Tupac, Biggie, already talked about Kendrick, Kanye, everybody. You hear one word from those guys, you know it's them.
Yeah.
You know, something
real,
distinctive.
Even at that point, there's those guys that have that voice.
Everybody.
I'm trying to remember who it was that we were talking about. One of the episodes we talked about that the biggest strike against them was that they didn't really, like, their song
was
good.
Matt. I know who it was. Craig Mack.
Craig Mack.
Flavoring Year.
Yeah, we did. His story's crazy, man. His story's really crazy. We did that episode. And
yeah, because I was confused on that video when I was a kid, bro. I was like, so is this Busta Rhymes or like?
Exactly.
I'm like, who is this?
Busta Rhymes light with his delivery. And he didn't have anything.
He's Diet Busta. I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. This is Busta Zero. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's cool that Ahmad had, feel like he has.
That's important.
Sound.
Cause I, even with me, man, like every artist grows up and then they just sound like somebody for so long until they don't. Like Kendrick sounded like Lil Wayne forever until he didn't, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if you guys noticed, but like, he was like K-Dot at first. And then when he was K-Dot, he was obsessed with Lil Wayne. Like, he even had like this album, like C4. He like drew on his eyelids, kind of like Lil Wayne did. He was like, huge Lil Wayne fan. Everybody loved Lil Wayne then, like, because Lil Wayne was just that guy, just dropping nonsensical bars. It's just like, you know, I'm so high I can eat a star, and everybody's like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever. And then like Kendrick was on that same wave where he's just like, he wanted to do that, like that tone that Lil Wayne had, but it was Kendrick's voice, so it didn't come out perfect. And then it just developed into this thing, and it just became Kendrick. Same thing with like J. Cole. Like, J. Cole, he was like always listening to like Eminem and Jay-Z, and he was like trying to merge the two. And he even talks about how he was like, it just didn't come out right. And then I finally felt, and then like he got this little Nas, like he wanted to be Nas. So he was like, okay, I can turn on my Jay-Z, my Nas, my Eminem. And then it just happened to, you know, fit his own style, and he just developed his own style.
My favorite example of any of that, though, is like, listen to Eminem Infinite.
Yeah,
and like Infinite. Hear Eminem, then listen to The Outsiders, which was like the crew from New Jersey that Eminem started collaborating
with. Yes, I know.
And then
exactly
you listen to the
about.
Slim Shady LP, and it's like, oh my god, he picked up so much of The Outsiders' cadence with the stuff where it's just like, especially in like My Name Is, you know, where he's like extraterrestrial, running over pedestrians, and it's like,
I know exactly
raping
what you're talking
lesbians.
About.
Like, oh my god, Outsiders should have been the biggest.
They were so
group.
Dope. I found them on accident because I went back in the day when there was like LimeWire. I like did the whole Eminem like discography thing, and I got like Rickrolled like three times until I actually until I got a like actual discography, and it had some like tapes, like it had some like freestyle stuff, and then there's like some songs that he had, and I guess this was when he was in his Vanilla Ice phase. He had a Vanilla Ice phase where he just wasn't even like super lyrical. He was just kind of like rapping just to rap. Like, hey, yo, my name is Joe and I come from the, and you already know. It's like white, blue, and red, and yellow. And then there was some stuff like The Outsiders, and there was like a collab. And then there was the Infinite thing, and there was like all this other like freestyle stuff where he started doing like the whole syllable thing. Like, How do you feel about having another baby brother? Nasty trucker talking like a, I like to smoke the chocolate tie, walking by, you could die, give it an awkward eye. Like that was all like, that was like the outsiders type flow. And I know exactly what you're talking about because I tell people about that and they're like, oh, this is so crazy.
Dude, the second someone played me the first, like they're like, here, listen to some of this group real quick. And I listen to them, I'm like, yep, this is, and he's said it on, like, it's not even like it's like, oh, this undercover secret. Like he references them in a bunch of his early albums. I think they had a falling out because of Marshall Mathers' LP, because two of them recorded guest vocals for, I want to say either Amityville or Remember Me. And someone in the studio was like, this song's too long, you can only keep one of the guest vocals tracks. And I think it's Amityville. He kept Bizarre and cut the Outsiders. And they, I guess they felt really like disrespected by that.
Yeah. That's just how it is with Eminem's life, bro. Like, I feel like even with the Bass Brothers, right? The guys who were like producing for him early on, who are like, they're responsible for all of the hits. And then you're like, you don't know. They're like unsung heroes because it's just like I don't know if it's the label or if it's just what's going on with the music. It just makes you can only have one star. You know what I mean? You can only have one star. And it's like, nobody else can get their flowers or like their roses, which is why I think the game is going to change, because now, like, I feel like it's direct to consumer with like TikTok and stuff. Like the world, it's crazy now. Yeah, like you could be an artist, not need a label.
Well, let's talk about that real quick, actually, because you've been kind of doing all right doing that yourself right now.
Yeah,
you're showing up on both of our For You pages.
Yeah, that's crazy. And it's like, both, you know, guys are hip hop heads, music lovers. You're also like just random, like just from different parts of the world. So it's just like different, you know, upbringings. And so I think it's dope. And I don't know. I just feel like the game is going to change now, because now it's who's going to be in control.
Yeah,
the people
I think
are.
It's I would hope that you're right about that. It's just who's in charge of those algorithms. They're obviously working well for you right now, and that's great. Yeah. But at some point, if someone gets a hold of those and messes with them to favor people with money or something, you know, like
that's how it always works. Yeah,
that's the worrisome part. You know, that's kind of the way things were. Is you needed to get signed to a label, and then that label would put money behind you, and that's the only way you were gonna make it. Well, now, like you said, artists can make it as long as the integrity is kept of the places that you know, that it's based on who is actually good, who people are actually watching, and it's not warped by money.
That's our generation, like, and like our generations are like, but I feel like the Gen Z, Gen X or whatever they are all about P2P. Like they share everything. I mean, these kids share everything. They share everything. Like now it's to the point to where I saw a commercial the other day where I think it was like Jaden Smith. He's like, you don't want to go buy new jackets. How about you get a jacket that lasts forever? That was worn by somebody 13 years ago. It's like, they're going to start sharing clothes now. It's just like, let's recycle clothes.
So, I get it.
Jaden's making making a commercial for like Goodwill.
No,
like,
it was actually a Levi's commercial, but I didn't know what was going on. And I guess Levi, they're going to start like repurposing like old throwaway clothes or whatever. And to make like, and they're going to start selling less.
Half
crazy.
The time when I walk into Target, I think it's the 90s just based on the clothes on the rack and stuff.
So true.
The Levi's campaign too, which I saw this, and I actually, I mean, I like Levi's as a brand, but their point is, hey, our stuff's a little bit more expensive, but it lasts.
It lasts forever.
Yeah, it lasts forever, as opposed to you're going to go buy something from somewhere else made cheap and it's going to...
Just buy one piece. Buy one denim jacket for the rest of your life and then give it to your little brother.
Right. I actually kind of like that thinking.
I love it, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying this new generation, they're like, if the algorithm starts to mess with the way that people are receiving music, especially today in today's world, they're going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to stop using that platform and I'm going to go to Reddit or I'm going to go to Twitter or I'm going to go here.
Well, at some point the industry usually bends to what people use. It's kind of like, I believe this is true. I do think that YouTube plays count towards something.
It has to be like it's a certain number.
Right.
So like, there's like 1,000. I mean, I think you have to get like 5,000 plays for one album sale, maybe 10,000.
Yes.
But they change it a lot though.
Right.
So like, it just depends on like see, that's the thing. It's like the metrics will always change.
Well, yeah. Cause I was gonna say the metrics have to keep changing because like in my brain, with the amount of TikToks that I've seen using Lizzo's About Damn Time, that should have been the number one song for the last like month and a half.
Yeah.
And
I think
like it's in the top five, but it's like, what other songs are getting much attention as this
My
song?
Money Don't Jiggle Jiggle, It Folds. That should be the number one song in the world, right?
But you know what? No. Okay. So it's so funny you brought that up. So the guy actually started the controversy about this was I feel like an astronaut in the ocean. Yeah. So, okay. When that song came to and it hit TikTok and it did its thing and the streaming numbers went crazy, SoundScan had no choice because it was streamed on Spotify so much. Same thing with 24 Karat Golden. Like a lot of people thought that kid was like an industry plant or something, but it's like, no, he had Charli D'Amelio use his song and it just went crazy. And that's how his song was number one. And then Sony was like, okay, I guess we'll put, you know, a couple million into this on a music video or whatever. But both of those guys have like the same story. They're like, yeah, it went on TikTok. And then the amount of people that went to TikTok and started streaming it made it, you know, go crazy.
Well, this goes back to kind of your point about people sharing things is like, that Jiggle Jiggle song is a perfect example. Someone repurposed an interview audio from an interview and someone put a beat to it and created a song that people liked. I guess if these songs, the other one I think of, which I've used it plenty of times, is the Here Comes the Boy. You know that one? The one that people always put in cat videos. It's just like a clip of a song, but then I guess you got to take that song and put it on Spotify, a place where people are just going to stream the song and listen to it.
Exactly.
I mean, there's nothing in place at all yet? Or were you saying, Norman, that there is something?
No,
in
I'm
place
saying so
for TikTok views.
No, there is but it just depends. Like in the case of the astronaut in the ocean, they broke off TikTok. Like they went number one and charted for like a very long time just because of TikTok. Wow.
And I think that was similar with Palfu, which I've mentioned before, that Deathbed song. Like they used the sample, the chorus in so many TikTok videos that people started checking out the actual song on Spotify.
Oh, what's that one song that went back to number one after like 30 years or 20 years? The dude with the cranberry juice. He was like on a skateboard or something.
The Fleetwood Mac song.
Yeah, Fleetwood Mac. Yes. Bro, like because I always check billboards, and one day I was on Billboard. I was like, oh my God, this song is back on. Like they made history.
Yeah.
Like they went back to the chart. Like they charted again. And then like just recently Frank Ocean did with Lost. And it's just like, wow, this is crazy.
Really?
The songs can resurge into a billboard.
Jeez, Frank Ocean. He puts out an album every 10 years. He's just like, I don't even need to. It'll just get popular again. That's how good
it is. That's another Def Jam, Rick Rubin thing right there. Yeah. Those guys are innovators.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, before we got to wrap this up, we got to decide if Ahmad brought the one-hit thunder or if he was a one-hit blunder. One thing I will say is that I can't find any information. There's like no information on what happened to this dude. I can't even find the story of why he
disappeared. Besides that, well, I mean, I told you it was Giant. It was the Giant Warner Brother. It was like a subsidiary. And then that record label like failed. Oh. And then because that record label failed and his contract was tied up into it, he couldn't put out music. So,
jeez.
I mean, I guess he just was
like. Yeah, and that's when he moved.
Yeah.
Because he never stopped.
Nah.
Like, it's like he, I think the full breakdown of the story was that he had this song in 1994. Record label issue held him up for a couple years. He did that Fourth Avenue Jones from 2000 to 2005. 2006, he went back to college and got a degree in African American studies and sociology.
Yeah.
And then finally put out, when he was done college 4 years later, put out the second Ahmad album.
Yeah.
So he kept himself busy. I applaud him on that at least.
At least he released more music. I mean,
yeah, there was that band and there's some other stuff. He kind of stayed. He stayed in the game, but I definitely think him wanting to pursue like a superstar type career kind of like took the, and a lot of the Cali guys are like that. Like Kendrick is slowly becoming that guy now.
Mm-hmm. And it sounded like the Fourth Avenue Jones, they put out two self-released albums, got signed to Interscope.
Yeah.
And then Interscope just didn't put out their record, yeah. like held them up on a contract thing forever and then eventually dropped them and they did more self-released records after that. So both cases, he kind of got fucked over by record labels is what it comes down to.
He definitely, yeah, he definitely could have kept going on a very commercial.
Right.
Yeah, he could have went commercial path, he could have kept it going easily.
I'm giving Ahmad a thunder. I'm saying to release a song.
It's unanimous.
Yeah, is this an instant unanimous? We're saying
yeah, it's unanimous. Instant, right.
To release this song when you're 18 years old, get screwed over by a record label, eventually put out music again. Most people, it sounds like it's a little bit out of his hands, and at 18 years old, who knows what you're signing or agreeing to, and then the fact that he was able to have a hit in the top 40 at this time. In 1994, we've talked about on this show a lot, it was a very stacked year for music and everything in general. So the fact that he was able to break through in any way in the top 25 or whatever he hit, I'd say Ahmad brought the thunder.
One last quick thing, though, Norman, where if people have been listening and saying, man, this dude knows his shit, where can they go to hear more of your tracks, follow you on TikTok and all of that?
Yeah, just NORMANSANN. I'm not even trying to sound douchey, but like you can just Google it and all of the links will pop up, the Spotify, Apple Music, the YouTube stuff, and just have fun. I mean, I am the genre bender, so if you like rap a little bit, but you favor singing more, I have some of that. If you favor hip hop, I got some boom bap hip hop. If you favor melodic stuff, I got some melodic stuff. Also, we working on some heavy metal and some country. So
wow,
I got some of that coming out.
Nice.
Yeah. But just having fun. Like, I'm blessed to be independent now. So it's like, I could just do whatever I want. It's like, if I'm just motivated to make whatever, I'll make whatever. So yeah. NORMANSANN. If you don't find me on your own, bet you're going to hear it from your friend.
Hell yeah.
Like Riley Reed with these loads.
and I mean, hit up those TikToks. Yeah. The way that you make the last line of your TikToks back to the beginning
thanks,
so that man. It's like an eternal loop.
Thanks.
Every time I'm like, how's he going to do it this time?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, man. Brands are really into that too. So they've been hitting me up trying to get me to do stuff like that for them. And I'm like, I'm with it.
Nice.
You got to get that Betty Crocker deal for all those cakes you've been making.
Oh, my gosh.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalios of the bands Punchline Pack and Another Cheetah and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing Runiverse off of the Punchline remix album, Politefully Dead. Do you want to start a podcast? Contact Chris and Matt at weknowpodcasting.com for how we can make your show sound as professional as possible. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app, and tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder.
You are my universe. You are my universe. And I'm just a planet. And I can't stand it.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at SoundTalentMedia.com.